Hello, everyone. Thanks for sticking around after that break. So today I'll be discussing my research on irrigation method and its effect on carbon cycling in semi-arid ag soils. So first off, California is the largest producer and exporter of fruits, vegetables, and nuts in the nation. And with such a large economic variable on agriculture in California, a lot of farmers do have to look at their available resources to continue this revenue. And in California, we do have issues with water availability. And for many farmers, you have to consider not only how much of your resource you have available, but how you distribute it onto your property. So the common irrigation methods that I'll be giving an overview are on surface irrigation, where you can have very general flooding or furrow irrigation, to sprinkler irrigation, and then also to even more precise types of irrigation like micro irrigation, specifically micro sprinkler or drip. So for my group, what we're really interested in looking at these irrigation methods is because they influence redox status within the soil, and where you have the least redox fluctuating conditions being under micro sprinkler and drip, and you have greater redox fluctuations in an area that's commonly flooded, like in a furrow irrigated landscape. And the quantity of the volume of soil that's affected by these redox fluctuations does differ between the two sites, where you have larger a larger volume of soil going under different redox status that is flooded versus something that is has more precise water application. So for my project, I'm going to be for this work, I'm going to be discussing my experience in a furrow irrigated landscape. So for here, in a furrow irrigated landscape, you have water that's being applied into a furrow, but it really does not just vary across different types of irrigation methods like furrow versus micro sprinkler, but also within a single an area. So in a furrow irrigated orchard, we have more redox fluctuating conditions near where the water source is, and further away with the topography, you have less redox fluctuating conditions. My question is, how does the soil moisture and ultimately the redox gradient influence carbon turnover between something that's in a furrow or on a berm? So fortunate for me, I live in an area that's known for its citrus orchards. And in Riverside, it is a semi-arid landscape, but with the construction of the gauge canal in Riverside, we do have water available in the area. And historically, this area has heavily utilized furrow irrigation. So at one of the Riverside citrus orchards, they grow Washington navel oranges. The soil is pretty sandy. The site that I'm looking at is a certified organic. It's been there for over 100 years and been using furrow irrigation since it started. And it is irrigated pretty consistently twice a month for 48 hours. And this is just a general schematic of what the landscape looks like, where I'm mostly interested in the redox gradient of the berm, the furrow, and at the equivalent depth of the furrow, because this is the area that gets similar soil moisture but doesn't undergo as oxidized conditions like in the furrow. And at my site, I installed different probes. I installed soil moisture and redox probes across the soil profile, including areas above the in the berm. And just to show how it varies with depth, these are just some preliminary data from the soil moisture sensors across different depths. And you can see that it does, with depth, it does change a lot. And this, because soil moisture does influence the redox changes in soil, we would expect to see that gradient. And we installed some platinum-tipped redox electrodes in our site to see how redox is actually changing, not just looking at the soil moisture. And you can see that it does, at the onset of irrigation, you do have, this is at the 63 centimeter depth, that the soil does go from suboxic to anoxic, but recuperates within about 8 hours. So at the site, I to look at the gradient, I looked at three specific sites, which is simplified as A, B, and C. And I wanted to look at the carbon associated with these different areas. So I did a sodium polytungstate density separation. And the light fraction is mostly particulate organic matter. And the intermediate fraction is the co-precipitated mineral and organic matter. And the heavy fraction is mostly the organic matter coated on minerals. And I took these soils, did the density separation, and then looked at it under, looked at the carbon 1S edge next half spectra on the bulk soil, the intermediate soil fraction, and the heavy fraction. And I did this at the CLS SGM beamline. And I also calculated the mass balance between these three different fractions. You can see that the berm B, the one at the different, at the equivalent depth of the furrow, does have less of the light fraction associated, so this is something that we expected because it's not a surface soil, it's subsurface, and it does have more of a larger fraction of it in the heavy fraction for the berm B site. So looking at my carbon nexoffs at these three sites, the bulk soil showed that the aromaticity was lowest at the berm and highest within the berm at the equivalent depth of the furrow, which is something we expected. We would see that site B is more reduced than site C and A. And we see the same trend looking at the different fractions. However, I do want to point out with the heavy fraction compared to like the bulk soil that the aromaticity is far higher in the B fraction than the other two sites. And then also the mid fraction has the same trend where we have aromaticity being the lowest in the berm and highest in the berm at from furrow depth. So other than just looking at the carbon chemistry within these three sites, we also want to calculate how that changes the CO2 flux between the furrow and within the berm. So what we plan on doing is comparing the flux within the berm and furrow during an irrigation event, so planting a life core monitor and doing this over time and seeing how that actually changes with the onset of irrigation. And then also looking, since we already have the density fractionations, we want to look at the rates of carbon turnover or the age using isotopic measurements on not just the gradient of the A, B, and C, but also on the three fractions. And then ultimately, I didn't mention it in this talk, but this isn't the only site that I looked at. I also looked at a microsprinkler site. So what we want to do is look at this furrow irrigated site and then also compare it to a microsprinkler site and see how varying these redox changes do affect the carbon. And I'd like to acknowledge my department and the Kyle White Lab for helping me and also the CLS group, Jay Dines and Tom Regier. And I will take your questions.
Then you have time for questions.
That's great. Thank you. And I may have just missed it, but tell me a little bit more about how long these soils have been under this particular regime. Maybe it's been 80 years, but I'm curious in the patterns that you're seeing and what's associated with the mineral phase and the mineral phase, how persistent that would be. Let's say if you did a reciprocal transplant, you know, between the berm and your furrow, would it just change in an hour a day? Do you have any sense of how
long-term? Yeah, so the part of this project, so this site here was actually used to be a furrow irrigated site, and they switched about 7 years ago. So if we do see any differences, we might see that, you know, this has been furrow irrigated for over 100 years. It's in the same landscape. And this site has been mostly furrow irrigated but switched very, so we would see some short-term changes between those two sites. So
the actual furrows and berms, like that little different height, that has been in place for
years? Over 100 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
So water flow is going to be very important in the And of course, you have the plant roots there, the tree roots. So I'm just wondering out loud about, you're assuming that distribution of water flow without any information on the distribution of water flow.
Yeah, that's something that we do need to incorporate, because the roots are definitely going to change how water's moving. So that's, yeah, something that we...
And we are. We're working with the camera and using
the... Anyone else? Do you have any sense for how different the mineralogy is? Has it been long enough that the mineralogy is changing?
I think it might have, but I'm not certain. I need to actually look at the mineralogy first. And
let's thank Claudia again.